Monogamish contains content intended for mature audiences. The views expressed here are for entertainment purposes only. Please enjoy the show.
And I also had a boyfriend who told me about a patient that he had at a head and spinal cord injury hospital who had such a high spinal cord injury that he couldn't swallow on his own. And he couldn't, like, clear his throat of phlegm or anything, so he had a button that he would bite. And when he needed suction to have his tracheotomy suctioned or any kind of phlegm, he would bite the button, and people would come in, and they would suction him out, and he would have an orgasm. Every indicator of an orgasm, they weren't checking to see whether it's, you know, spooge happened or anything, but every physiological indicator otherwise, flushing and the, like, you know, incredible endorphin surge and stuff, and they tried everything, sending people in that they would... They thought that, like, oh, he'll never be able to have an orgasm around me. It didn't fucking matter. They'd send in six big, huge guys, and he'd bite the bug. He'd be like, yeah, get it.
Oh, wow.
Hi, Ishes. Welcome back to Monogamish. I'm Justina.
And I'm Kenji.
And we're Monogamish. Thank you guys for joining us again, season three, and we are back with special guests.
I know. Today, I've never met these people before today.
We've been visiting and chatting a little bit before the show, and I'm really excited. It sounds like it's going to be a really interesting conversation.
I know.
So welcome, Mistress Saskia. Hi. And Mike Charming.
There you go.
Welcome, you guys. We really appreciate you coming on the show. You guys are from Rack Room, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that first.
It's RAC is an acronym, Risk Aware Consensual Kink, and that became the name sort of by the horrible process of trying to get a committee to agree to a name of something. So that is the most boring name that everybody could agree on when I was first sharing a space with several other people, another group in town, and a couple of other private people who all wanted to host parties. So we all had different ideas for what to call it, and everybody thought everybody else's ideas sucked, so the only one that everybody was cool with was, like, Rack Room. It's, yeah, sure, fuck it, why not?
So it works.
It's
and now it's worked, yeah.
So when we moved from one place and moved out of the one place when the lease ended, I thought that everybody was going to be going to the new venue that we found, but some of them, like, branched off someplace else, and others were, like, yeah, maybe we'll get around to it later. So I just kept the name rather than just changing it back to something else. Because I thought, like, I don't want to, you know, disrespect our camaraderie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they never came back on board with stuff. So it's just stayed Risk Aware Consensual Kink.
You know, it sounds boring and plain, but, I mean, you guys have built, like, a brand, you know?
I wanted to be really pedantic and call it Studio Queer, C-U-I-R. Because that means leather in French, and French is how people know you're, like, super smart and classy and shit.
I love it.
But
I love it.
Other people that were there were very hetero, and they, especially the guys, did not like the idea of calling it Studio Queer.
Oh my God.
And apparently I don't pronounce the C-U-I-R properly. Kier? Yeah. I can do German. I'm not so good at French.
So, Mike, you guys are partners in both the business and in real life.
Yes.
Together. So tell us a little bit about your relationship.
So we met about 5 years ago or so when I first moved out to Colorado. Moved here about 6 years ago, so not too long after I moved here. You know, I had already been in the BDSM scene for a little bit. Got started in D.C., pretty good scene out there. And then when I moved here, wanted to get involved with the scene here, I had came across Sanctuary, Rack Room. Studio Friction wasn't around at that point, so I, you know, visited all the different clubs, and my visit the Rack Room, you know, obviously we didn't immediately start, you know, seeing each other, but, you know, met her and got up the courage to ask her out on a date, a real date. And it was actually a Village Inn. What was our first date. We had played casually a little bit before then, but yeah, that was our first real date, and just kind of, you know.
And it would have been someplace classier, except there's I've got immune system issues, so there's a gazillion things I can't eat.
Oh,
so Village Inn has sausages and eggs, and I know that I can at least do that.
I have a million different things with me wrong too, so my diet is limited.
Yep.
So limited.
Every time there's something new I can't eat, like, oh, fuck you.
Oh, God. Right there with you. Thank you.
I'm an atheist, so there's nobody to write a nasty letter to, but I will bitch all fucking day. Fucking rice. I can't eat rice. Who the hell can't eat rice?
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
This body was built on rice and Popeyes and...
Yeah. I can't eat any of that anymore.
I also lived in Europe,
sad.
And I got spoiled on really good cheese and making my own tarama salada and
the pastries.
I can make pate. I grew up doing gourmet cooking, and so I could roll out like a pho buffet for any friends that would drop by. Just get some pho broth boiling, keep rice noodles on hand. Get some meat out of the freezer, set all the stuff out. I usually had cilantro and mint and shit in my garden, and anybody could just come over like, you're hungry? Of course you're hungry. I'm Jewish, so that happened. So like anybody coming over would be like, I'm going to feed you.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is happening.
When can we come? What's the address?
It's pretty easy to like make rice bowls and just put out a bunch of shit or rice noodle bowls.
Yeah, and everybody has their own toppings. Yep. Get to it. Wow, yeah. I love it.
So, Mike, are you a dom too?
Switch. Okay. So I am submissive to her. She is the only person that I am submissive with. I don't currently have any other partners. We are polyamorous. But any other partner that I have had in the past since we've been together, I've been dominant to them.
Okay.
Have you always been dominant with your other partners?
So when I first got into the scene, I identified primarily as dominant. I also identified primarily as straight. Both of those have, grown since then. And now I consider myself more pansexual. And that's been, developed since I've been in the scene also. I've started playing with, people of other various genders. And then as I was playing with them in the BDSM type, world, and there wasn't anything directly sexual, eventually it develops like maybe there is some sort of sexual connection there also.
Got it.
And I'm still kind of discovering, more of that side. As I've, grown also, I've developed my switchier side of things.
Okay.
I love that you've evolved, and because people think sexuality is finite, and it doesn't need to be that way. It can change and flow, and you can go through phases or not. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you've grown with it. With the polyamory, are you guys in a hierarchy? Like, do you consider her your primary?
We don't really do like the hierarchy. We do have some things that is unique between us. Mm-hmm. That would be something that we would only share, together.
Right.
Not necessarily in a hierarchy kind of sense. Okay. But I guess if you're, how most people would kind of think of the dom sub kind of thing, obviously she would, be higher than me in that, dynamic.
That does not mean that I would be the dominant of any of his partners.
Right.
Right.
Yes, correct.
Do you have additional partners?
No, I also don't have any puppies. there's only so much time and energy that I've got. Unless I have more to give to a partner.
Right.
I'm not going to take anybody on unless I know that I would have something that I could give them. And it's like running a business, two businesses, and health issues and things.
Oh, yeah.
So you also have another business.
Pavlovia.
Okay.
Pavlovia, after the research scientist and the dessert. There's a Pavlova dessert that is egg white meringues with cream and fruit layered. And I really, really like that. The Germans in Wisconsin, and they call it Schaumtorte, foam cake. But in Australia, they call it a pavlova after a ballerina there. So I like that. And I'm also fascinated with behavioral psychology. So Pavlov, the research scientist.
All together.
Yes. So I will, if somebody mentions the desserts or the dog. That's all that.
So tell us a little bit about that business.
We see clients professionally, and... I started doing that myself in the mid-90s, 95, 96. I'd been doing social work for a long time and had also worked in offices with attorneys, and awful. I also did a lot of social work for several years, working with homeless populations and doing street outreach for HIV outreach and STI education and clean needles stuff like that back in the 90s, mid-90s. And I'd done hotline work and training and worked with domestic violence victims and run support groups and crap like that. And the people who do best in the pro-dom business so far are the people who have similar backgrounds that are really interested in social work. They may not like individual people. Mm-hmm. They don't have to, but they do have to be fascinated enough with humans.
Yes.
That they, like, even if they don't have a great connection with somebody or they don't have they have a client that's kind of a dick, they're still interested in why things didn't work and how they could do better and whether communication was their problem or, like, what, you know, what happened here rather than taking it really personally, which is very easy to do. But the people who do a little bit worse are people who just put everything into it and they don't keep anything back from themselves, so they don't have great boundaries with it. And they're like, yeah, but the clients love to get all this attention and all this, like, emotional connection and stuff. Like, but you have to hold something back for yourself because...
You gotta draw the line.
You have to.
Yo, man.
So is your...
They also burn out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Is your teaching all one-on-one?
It depends on whether we're getting, like, two apprentices on at the same time or not. If I've been mentoring anybody, then I'll usually include them. But there are people who, if they find out I've got new people on staff and I'm going to be doing Jenna torture training, they will, if they have enough notice, then they'll take, like, a week's notice. I'll take a day off of work just to be available for us to torture their genitals.
Oh, wow.
And that's horrible.
That is... That sounds so horrible.
and it's really fun when I'll get like 5 or 6 volunteers, and the first thing that we work on is like, you've got to stop acting like this is a holy temple. The cock and balls, it's just meat and nerve endings, chemistry. So instead of pretending like you have to treat it with reverence or something, grab a hold. Just grab a hold and fold, spindle, mutilate, find out where the inguinal canal is. Whether you can access that. When guys or people with testicles and penises get nervous or cold, those balls have to go somewhere. Where are they going? That's what the inguinal canal is. So I've had people come in myself when I've been playing with them, clients, and I'm trying to put some kind of a genital restraint on them. And when I can only get one ball in and I've been like poking around and like body fat and digging around, like, how many balls did you come in with?
Right,
I've had to ask that, and they're like,
God.
"Oh shit, I'm so sorry. I had prostate cancer. I had this cancer. I had like something, and so like I had one removed, or I had it exploded when I was like a soccer player." Like, okay, you got to let a bitch know.
I thought I lost it.
Not me.
I had it right here.
Right,
I played with one guy for a whole couple of hours, and at the end of it, I was like, how many thumbs did you come in with? Because he'd like one, half of one thumb was missing, and I had just been so focused on everything else. Like, I know I didn't do that.
No blood.
Not
at
today
all.
Anyway.
No blood at all. You're just like, yeah.
Pretty sure there'd be a mess.
That's when you know you're a professional.
All right.
So, how long does your training typically last for?
It kind of depends on. What kind of time people have available. It's hard to get people who can be available during the day to see clients, and that's, you know, weekday afternoons are tend to be when clients are most available to come in and see us, take time off of work, or they're in town for business or something, or they're couples, which is awesome. But it's hard to get people that have a flexible enough schedule that can just drop everything with a couple of hours notice. And there's plenty of people who are like, yeah, I could be available nighttime all the time. Like, and that's really not going to be helpful, because this is, the more flexible your hours are, the more, if somebody calls up and says, is there anybody I can see today? I can say like, yes, there is, as a matter of fact. So,
that
helps a lot. So if somebody has that kind of time available, then I can teach them stuff a lot more quickly. But I also have to not teach them too much too quickly, because it's really hard to absorb all the information. So I need them to like get a few basics down, understand some pressure points and brachial arteries, femoral arteries, things like that, that if they go bad, they go bad quickly. And if people pass out, then We don't get tipped. They just. And why it's important to untie the feet first rather than the arms, because if you untie the arms first, then people will just tip forward. And
oh,
that was an old Jesus joke that helped me remember when I did have somebody pass out on the cross once, because I did not know yet about the femoral arteries being right there, and pulling rope up that way is going to impede circulation. And that's a really big part of the body. If you're impeding circulation to the lower half of the body, you're like cutting down a whole lot of blood oxygen.
Oh yeah.
So the person passed out, and he was a good 200 pounds at least. And I had just bought like a few hundred feet of black rope, and he was like kind of fading in and out of consciousness. And I was just like, fuck. There's no way I could get him up the stairs and out the door and into the wheelbarrow and down to the canal and down. Chipper shredders over at grandma's house. I'll have to get that back. So he just kind of kept fading in and out, and he was acting like he was also feeling nauseous. So I was down there, and I remembered the Jesus joke, like, what do you, you know, so I teach everybody that comes on staff, like, begin with the end in mind. If you are going to be trying to suspend somebody or have them in restraints by their neck, if they pass out, that's where all their weight is going to be. And that's going to cut off the carotid arteries. That's going to be a problem. That can, like, if their weight drops too quickly and it jerks them, then you can have some bigger problems. And that's bad. It goes in your personnel file. And so keep all that. But I make sure that they hear the Jesus joke, that, like, they, hey, Peter, come over and you know, like, can you, like, take these nails out? And Peter starts with the hands. And then he just, boom, like, flips forward. Like, so while I'm sitting there with this, like, 200-pound guy fading in and out of consciousness and feeling nauseous, I'm just sitting there sawing through my brand new ropes and make sure, like, do the feet first. I remember the joke, feet first, and whew, that worked. Wow. It was really good.
Oh my god!
I was just hoping that he wasn't gonna throw up on me while he was up there. And he told me later, like, yeah, the only other time I've been tied up, I also passed out. Like, thanks so much for telling me that.
You gotta tell a bitch something, yes. Right?
Motherfucker. We will very often ask people questions about their health, and they figure, like, you're just a sex worker. What the hell do you need to know any of this medical information for? Like, if you have diabetic neuropathy, motherfucker, then that's a concern, because we don't want your foot to just, like, come off in our restraint.
I was gonna say,
right.
What do we do?
So you've been doing this for a really long time, because I can tell your education level is through the roof on this. I love your partner right before the show started. What did you describe her as?
The Bob Ross of Pro Domination.
Little fluffy balls.
So what got you into it?
Curiosity.
Okay.
Very curious. I am super ADD, and I get curious about all kinds of things. I was a military brat, and I've lived all over the world. So is he.
So am I.
Oh, my God. We're cousins.
Yes.
Air Force, Army?
Army.
Oh.
Navy. I was a Navy brat, and then I actually joined the Army.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
You went against your. What?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
What about La Familia?
I know, right?
Yeah, there's some playful contention there. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a friend who runs her own welding business down in Pueblo, and she gets she hires combat veterans, and one of them, she was a Marine, so when he first came to his first day of work, she had a big jar of crayons for him. She was like, there's your lunch counter. So she let him know right away, because she'd graduated from West Point.
Oh, shit.
Yep. She's the real deal.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
So looks like strawberry shortcake powerlifter. She's sexy as hell, so smart. And she tells all of her friends that, you know, about her pro-dom friend that she knows, that, like, makes her look like she's riding a short bus to school. Like, okay.
Okay.
So I lived in a lot of different places, lived around the world. So I am very appreciative of all kinds of different ways to live, different ways to do things. There's no one right way to do everything.
Yes.
There's if a cuisine is endemic or essential to one part of a world, it's probably because of the climate and what's available. And living in the Philippines, I learned about what authentic cuisine is. It's what you got.
Right.
Yep.
there's no one way to do fried rice. It's like you're putting hot dogs in that. That's not authentic, is it? Like, well, we're out of rats. What were you thinking?
It's like some sort of protein
you
here.
Use what you have. Like, so that was like, I think I get it. And I was also that kind of a pedantic asshole when I started taking language classes as one of my majors in college, and I was always expect the. I would ask the professor things about, like, isn't this proper? Is it this proper? And he said, think about Latin. It's a dead language because people would not be flexible with it.
Oh,
so
okay.
What is important with communication is if you can talk to people in ways that they understand. That's what matters with communication. So I had to get off of that high horse real quick because he was right. And I also knew as a military brat that being able to communicate with people is not all about having the best words or the most rightest words. So it does not matter if you can communicate effectively to people, whether you're using body language, nonverbal communication, whatever it is, that is much more important. And
a smile. A smile is like the best thing.
Also, if somebody is speaking to you in what is not their native language and they're not speaking English really well, shut your fucking mouth about it, because if you can't speak their language, you have no business saying anything.
Thank you.
And I've been thinking for the last year or so, like, all the different little languages that I have a smattering of or a little bit more, it's all colonizer language. It's all, I would like this food brought to me.
Oh, no way.
Where are the tourist things? Where's the theater? Where is the, like, it's all from the standpoint of, like, you never learn in any of your language classes in America. Where do I go to get a job?
Oh no!
And how do I get out of legal trouble here?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And how much for an eighth?
I love
I have had language instructors have said, here's what you say if you're in, like, if you're in Spain, if you're in Barcelona, then
and
you want to get some cocolante, then, like, oh, that's hash, right? Right. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. I wish we would have known that when
we
went there.
We figured it out the last day.
Yes.
We were so upset.
It was in the 80s that I was there, and they were calling it cocolante, I think, just going around like chocolate. Like, it's fucking legal now everywhere.
Yeah.
But I also got to be in Amsterdam and in The Hague when I was in high school living in England, and everything was just kind of mind-blowing there too. So so perspective is always a really cool thing with and that I apply to my philosophy with kink, is that, you know, seeing with him getting to a comfort level with understanding his own orientation, his own inclinations, whatever, just getting to a more comfortable level. It's like water seeks its own level. And when there is an absence of any kind of resistance to what you're being told you should do, what you shouldn't do, what you should feel, what you shouldn't feel, I'm very curious about where people go and where they get to when they don't have anything that's telling them that something about them is bad or wrong. So if nobody is telling you this is sick, that is sick, and because kink, by its definition, is a transgression of whatever the social norm is, what happens if there is no social norm to transgress? So it's going to be very culture specific. So there are men particularly who will want humiliation play, and the kind of things that they find humiliating are completely telling about. If they're saying, like, oh, I want to be humiliated and I want to be dressed up like a woman, they don't mean Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They don't. it's like, and I want to be treated like a woman. Oh, so you can't go walk around at night and people aren't going to let you finish sentences?
Oh, my God.
And
that is hilarious.
I learned that they will hang up the phone and that is a bad way to do sales.
That is hilarious.
Like, ask them, like, does this mean that you're going to give up, like, 30, 40, 50% of your paycheck? Or, like, all right. So then it got to be like, no, I want to be dressed up. Like, ah, you want to be porno Barbie. And that is what you think being a woman is. You want to have your mouth kind of hanging open and you want to be, have the deer in the headlights look because you think that we're idiots.
Like a fucking bimbo.
And do you think that all we think about all day, every day is getting laid, because that's what you think that you would do if you really were a woman. So talking about, you want to be porno Barbie, and like, all right, so you want session number 23. Fine.
Do you ever turn down clients?
Yes, there'll be people who, like to do like a crank anchors kind of thing sometimes, and they'll just think of the most extreme thing that they can think of, and they will call around to see like, can you make fire come out of my dick? Like, I can, I won't. There's some, I have some commitment issues, and that would be kind of a permanent thing that would cause harm.
Oh.
But one of them who called and asked for something like that, I looked up because he said he saw it at a party in San Diego. I'm like, bullshit. But because the kink world is small enough, I was able to find people in San Diego who confirmed for me that, yes, they did have a party where they did indeed make fire come out of somebody's dick.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm listening. My listening ears are on. And they said that the person already had a urethral reroute.
Oh.
It was a body mod thing. There's, I think, a little bit less crossover in the kink world and the body mod world than there is between the swinger world and the
kink
world. So yeah. He had had a urethral reroute done for shits, giggles. I don't know. Definitely not for shits. Probably for giggles. So they ran a tube up from a can of propane, ran the tube up, had it come out a little bit, and then lit that sucker up. So they didn't leave it long enough to burn his urethra. The metal didn't get, you know, they didn't do it long enough for it to get hot. But next time the guy called, I had found out, I had Googled his number, and like, oh, you're a youth pastor in Canada, Saskatchewan. Good to know. So he called again.
My God.
When he called again, I was like, hey there, Pastor so-and-so, and he didn't even slow him down. He was just like, yeah, so did you figure it out yet? I sure fucking did.
He was so happy to hear your voice.
It's not going to happen unless you want me to perform a urethral reroute, and that is definitely not on my list of shit that I'm willing to do.
Oh my God. Wow.
Huh.
Wow.
That's interesting.
That is so interesting.
And I've had people call and tell me that they wanted me to bite their genitals off and then cook them and then eat them.
And you
eat them?
Yes,
I see
eat
that.
Them.
There's a show on Netflix.
This
was
back
about
in the 1998, 99.
Uh-huh.
So maybe they got the idea from him.
Well, this was like it's set in a motel room. And every episode is different, and a different story goes on in the motel room. And I walked in on one episode.
Oh, when I was watching
that
one
with Tim Roth and Madonna?
It was like Hotel something.
Quentin Tarantino was in it?
I can't remember
four
the
rooms.
Name of it.
Four
I might
rooms.
Have to have Drew
I think it was four
look
rooms.
It up. But
it's this show. I don't think it's on Netflix. I think it's on HBO.
Okay.
It's called like Room 13 or something like that, and it's just a hotel. And it, you know, every episode is somebody new checking into the room. And yes. Yes. And 214. There you go. Yeah. So
and
strange.
During
and
one
so,
episode.
I remember that. I
totally
forgot about that.
There's two men in a room. And you can tell that they've obviously planned this. They're going there. They're meeting. And their plan is to cut each other's dick off, cook it, and, you know, have a dinner together. And I was sitting there the whole time like, who thinks of this shit?
What the fuck?
But apparently a lot of people think of this shit.
Yeah, there's a whole porn genre for, you know, cannibalism.
Yeah.
So. Wow. You had your home dungeon, and then
I did,
that's when you decided to open up Brack Room?
I started doing some parties, and then there's just too many people in my little house in City Park, so I talked to some other people that were doing their own thing in their own garage or basement or whatever, and talked to a couple of other people that wanted to do some stuff like, how about if we rent a space? Like, and we found a space down in the Rhino District and got that all pretty and decorated up and stuff. And it was nice to be able to have, we had like 4,000 square feet. It was huge.
Oh, wow. And was it all private dungeons or how does it?
It was supposed to be, yeah. But we didn't really have a whole lot of stuff that was separated out into different rooms. But it was where we could all have parties. And then when we weren't having parties, then we could see clients there. So we had a calendar so we could let people know the space isn't going to be available this time to this time. So.
Okay. Nice. And that's how it works now? Is Rack Room?
Nope. No. It's, I'm the owner and we don't have partners in it.
Right.
But we would not have been able to stay open during COVID when we had to close. I mean, we had to close down, so we didn't stay open, but we would not have been able to keep the business alive if it had not been for Mike.
Oh, really?
And we're still thousands and thousands of dollars behind in rent. So we were paying, the landlord was letting us pay partial rent, but he's still kind of expecting us to, like, make it up at some point. And I was like, dude, you put us in the red really early before COVID started by I think he got hit with a tax increase, so he passed right on to us, and it like, bumped up the rent like $500, which we had just been getting out of the red and into the green, and that wasn't even covering the utilities yet. I was just bringing in enough to cover the rent, and he was still covering like utilities until we were just about there, and then he was like, "Oh, you got hit with a tax increase," so like. Back into the red. So him telling us, like, why can't you guys get a business loan? Like, because you can't get, like, banks don't even like to give any business that's adult an account.
Right.
You
right.
can't get credit. You can't get loans. Well, you lie about it. Like,
shut
do
up.
You know what happens if you lie about banks when you have a business
right.
that's, like, Jesus.
That's not a good,
yeah.
Not a good route to go.
He would just call and lecture us and tell us that the governor, who's the gay Jew, is a Nazi, and to just ignore all the laws and to ignore everything, and that the code
God.
Was a hoax, and got to the point where I would just be in tears dealing with this guy. Like, how can you read and write at a fourth grade level and think at a second grade level?
Oh,
he just could not believe that he was saying, like, you should just stay open, screw the law, screw everything. Like, I actually have a conscience, and I would really like people to not die. And I don't want the CDC kind of spotting us as a transmission vector. We are not going to create super spreader events unless there's a camera crew there.
So. Yeah, I remember whenever we first got this lease, he was being magnanimous and let us pay cash, you know, for our rent. And then once we started asking for receipts, for that, it was like, well, this is supposed to be like under the table. It's like, no, this is a business.
We can't afford to do this shit under the
what
table,
the
buddy. He
about?
Was excited because he thought, like, since he had a dispensary in the building and then he was going to have a dungeon, he was just excited, like, I'm dealing with the underworld. Yay! Like, the underworld
still
pays taxes,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah. We're still legit, both businesses.
And the fact
come on now.
The fact that the dispensary was more legit than our business was like, this is not fair.
Right.
That is such a fucking, he's looking to fucking stash money,
yeah.
you know?
And he was, yeah, when we, he's like, you know, if you pay me cash, like, well, cool, as long as we get receipts from
yeah.
you, then
yeah.
suddenly all the fun was out of it. What do you mean receipts? Like, we have rules. We have rules.
we have a tax ID. We have LLC. Yeah.
So how did you keep, how did you help in, like, keeping it open?
He's a white dude. You gotta ask that. Got a job.
I know. J-O-B.
So, I mean, some of it was, you know, direct, you know, donations and all that.
Okay.
But
that helped a lot.
But also, a big part of it was getting the website going, getting the actual like membership dues and all
that.
So
wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah, so we had a lot of members that couldn't afford to stay, you know, with us, you know, during the pandemic because they were, you know, had financial,
mm-hmm.
you know, hardships in themselves. But we still had a few members that could donate during all of that, so they were able to do that through the website and
wonderful.
So yeah.
Wonderful.
So it's membership based,
mm-hmm.
and how do people find you? And like,
we
what's
find
the process?
Them.
So is it by invite only?
No, we have a website, and also I've been around the scene for a very, very long, long time.
Yes.
At least half my adult life. I started when I was like 26, 27, something like that.
Okay.
And I'm 32 now. So
yeah.
Rode hard, put away, kind of wet.
I like
so
it.
It's been about 25 years ish, and just been really active. I've always been very community minded because I'm just fascinated by a lot of the social aspects. Like, how do we? I did not expect it to be cathartic to me. For me, I had no idea. I was just very curious about. Like the first time I went to spank a partner, they were bent over my lap and my hand. Froze. They were waiting for a spanking, like, what's going on? And I had to grab my hand like this because it was just frozen. It wasn't the like years of don't hit unless it's your brother.
That's
just
funny.
So I had a fucker had it coming. So I took my hand like that and like and then they went like ding. Okay, I get it. It's it makes them happy. So if I do it again, they're gonna make that noise again. And they did. That was awesome. So
Oh my gosh.
I was just curious, like, so what the fuck happened when my hand froze? What was all that about? Why would my hand freeze? And how is it that, like, if somebody was going to spank me, I would want to deck them? I would not be cool with that. So the first girlfriend that I had that I gave a spanking to, I was super into that. And she, her voice would get really, really high when she was super excited. So I was like, so how did that make you feel? And she said, it made me want to hit back. And she had a black belt or something. I sure as fuck didn't. And so I was just, that humbled me right the hell back down. Mm-hmm. It was really, really good for me to have that experience. Like, she's, I am not dominating her. I am not stronger, better, more worthy, any of that shit. She let me do that because she likes it. And if she didn't like it, she could have knocked me all over the room. And I had a boyfriend who would let me, like, you know, hit pressure points and try and, like, turn him over and fold him over, do all the, like, wrestling moves and shit like that.
Yeah.
And he just grinned at me one day, and suddenly I was a pretzel, like, what the fuck happened? Oh, you've been letting me, you've been just letting me, you've been pretending to go along. Okay. So I've just been very, very curious about all that. And I also had heard from people before I got into the scene that one woman told me that she had been in a relationship for, like, several years, and she was conditioned to have orgasms on command, vocal command.
Oh, wow.
So I was fascinated, like, how do you do that? How,
yeah.
How'd that work? How you make the, what does that button do? Wanted to know all the things. And she said that she had a job as a courier, and after they, like, 5 years after they'd split up, she would still get a call every now and then, and she would answer the phone because that's her job. And she would hear the person's voice, and they would say the word, and she would have an orgasm while she was driving or wherever the hell she was. Like, get the fuck out. This is something that people do. So,
teach me.
Yes. I know, right?
Teach me your ways.
I really needed to know. I had to know all this stuff. And I also had a boyfriend who told me about a patient that he had at a head and spinal cord injury hospital who had such a high spinal cord injury that he couldn't swallow on his own. And he couldn't, like, clear his throat of phlegm or anything, so he had a button that he would bite. And when he needed suction to have his tracheotomy suctioned or any kind of phlegm, he would bite the button, and people would come in, and they would suction him out, and he would have an orgasm. Every indicator of an orgasm, they weren't checking to see whether it's, you know, spooge happening or anything, but every physiological indicator otherwise, flushing and the, like, you know, incredible endorphin surge and stuff. And they tried everything, sending people in that they would, they thought that, like, oh, he'll never be able to have an orgasm around me. It didn't fucking matter. They'd send in six big, huge guys, and he'd bite the butt and be like, yeah, get it.
Oh, wow.
And so that is obviously something that we could do anytime.
Yes.
You don't have to have a spinal cord injury to make that happen. This is about your headspace. This is about if X, then Y, then that. Kind of like with studying feral children.
Wow.
If they don't learn language skills by a certain age, their brain won't form that. So same thing with Noam Chomsky, the linguist and political scientist, saying that when animals learn language, they can't understand syntax or anything, so they never will learn it. But then when I saw the same thing would happen with feral children, it's like, so if they cannot learn syntax after a certain age, perhaps it's about brain plasticity. So if it's about brain plasticity, this, and this, and it's something that's typical for mammals, maybe this whole orgasm on command or being able to get very specific about a sensor sensation, any kind of sensation, anything. It could be any kind of a trigger that you allow or somebody... my ethics say that I have to inform anybody if I'm going to condition them to have a turbo boost for their orgasms. So I have been able to condition people to do that, but I let them know first because I've heard horrible stories about people not realizing that they had been conditioned to orgasm and their partner would, you know, give them a little stimuli every time they had an orgasm, and they didn't realize that was going on. And then they would be at a family dinner or something, and they would, like, have, like, a fingernail scratched in a certain spot, and they would have an orgasm on the spot. Like, okay, I'm not going to do that. So I would let people know, like, I would like to do this. If you're cool with this, I would like to turbo boost your orgasm this way or just be able to cause it at all. And as long as they agreed to that, I'd be like, all right, let's go. Okay. So.
Wow. You have a lot of stuff to teach.
Yes.
Where can we sign up for your class?
I know.
So because of all that, because, you know, when I first dated the person when I was spanking them, my hand froze. I was like, so they could have a spanking, or I could tie them up, or I could put a blindfold on, and I couldn't do all of those things. And like, that's going to be maddening. I want to do all the stuff. So I apprenticed at a dungeon. There wasn't really an internet yet. I found it through the Rocky Mountain Oyster, which was way, way
Holy
back
shit,
when the world
oyster?
Was in black and white, the oyster.
Wow.
And I saw one place that was advertised there. They didn't have a website or anything yet, and I apprenticed there for just a few months, and I thought, I'll find out whether it's interesting. I'll probably get bored really quickly, but at least I'll, like, if I get to see, like, several different clients, a number of, a broad spectrum of humanity, then I will probably find out everything that I need to know, which was, in retrospect, now I realize that was stupid, but it's been 20-some-odd years later, and I'm still
wow.
so much more interested in everything in neuropsychology and biochemistry and all the stuff that I don't know shit about, but I would really, really like it if people would get more grant money for doing research, because there's some really cool shit that they could be doing for pain management and all kinds of stuff. I like teaching people biofeedback breathing, and I've been doing a class in the last couple of years where I teach them how to be aware of when their body is feeling anxious about something, because, you know, we teach ourselves not to do that, so I give them a biofeedback tool so that they will start to pay attention to, like, when you're feeling like something's not right, and you're sitting there squeezing this little thing. You're probably not aware of it, but if every once in a while look down at your hand, and if your hand is going nuts, pay attention. Your body is trying to tell you something.
That's amazing.
It may not be that, like, you got to stop whatever it is. It may just be like, oh, I'm super excited. Yay, 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 yay. Or it might be like, I wonder if they'll let me pee first, or like whatever it is. You need to learn first that your body's trying to tell you something. Once you get used to, like, listen, what's your body? What is it? Tell me what it is. Did Timmy fall in the well? What the fuck? What's the problem here? Because there is a problem, or you wouldn't be going like this. Once you do that, then you're going to be able to start breaking down, like, what about something is setting me off right now? There's, like, going to be a little, like, an applause meter. Like, what is it exactly? Let's narrow this down. Bing. Then you hit on the thing, like, oh, I freaked out because... Or I really just had to pee. It's okay. So that kind of stuff. I'm able to use, like, all of my little dilettante set of, you know, individual research projects on different stuff.
So it's constantly evolving. You're always learning and coming across new people that you try different techniques or things on.
I hope so. I hope I'm learning stuff that makes sense. If I'm just talking a bunch of shit, then it takes very little time if I, like, publish my research on FetLife or something. Like, hey, I learned, like, blah, 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 and people be like, oh, aren't you cute?
Like,
oh, so that was stupid, right? Like, yes, that was very stupid. And like, okay.
So, Mike, how did you get into it? What got you intrigued about...
So it was someone that I was dating, when I was living in D.C. that was into the kink scene. And, you know, I'd always kind of played around a little bit, you know, if you kind of think of it as, you know, the whole spectrum, you know, vanilla being on one extreme
right.
side. And I was kind of like French vanilla.
Okay.
You know? So, you know, played around in the bedroom. But she introduced me to some of the clubs there. And it's like, oh, there's a whole other, like, world and community and all that. So as I just got more involved there, I, you know, started discovering little things that I liked. So then just kind of evolved from there. And then, of course, you know, once I came here, you know, discovering the rec room and just like how, you know, Saskia mentioned, you know, you're always trying to learn new things and, you know, new experiences. And I think if anyone ever tries to say that they've learned everything that they need to know, that's total bullshit. And,
small.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. They might, you know, you don't have to be more hardcore or more intense than or anything. There's people that like that just like to climb up some rocks at the playground, and there's people that like to go up the sheer cliffs. That's all fine. It doesn't mean anybody's more or better or
right.
more intense, and that kind of like pissing contest is only lucrative if somebody is paying you.
So do you take clients over at the Rec Room as well?
I've taken some clients, not directly with Pavlovia, but I've done some professional cuddling. I also do some education. One class that I teach, I've taught in classrooms as well as individual couples on, for lack of a better term, central massage of erogenous zones, mostly vagina, vulva. There's one couple that I actually taught one person was a female to male trans man. So they didn't feel comfortable going to a bigger formal class. That's why they hired me directly to help them out, because they had, you know, some body dysmorphia issues around that area specifically. Mm-hmm. And actually I learned some stuff from them also, because up until that point I hadn't really learned as much as I know now about people who had been on testosterone for however many years, and there's a lot of physiological changes that, you know, come across from there. So I mean, there's the external part of the, you know, the vulva, and most people know now that the clitoris gets bigger on the outside. Also, the internal part of the clitoris gets bigger. So learning that, and it becomes a lot more sensitive, and, you know, just all sorts
and
of
tangible.
You know, yes, yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, a lot of the internal parts, you know, you can't feel a lot of the differences between, you know, whether someone's aroused or not. Mm-hmm. But with this person, and I didn't feel it myself specifically, but after kind of talking with them a little bit, they did tell me that, yes, you actually can feel a physical difference between not aroused and aroused, you know, with, you know, after they'd been on testosterone for a while.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, okay. Yeah.
He'd done the lesson with them privately, and then for like a week he didn't hear anything from them, and he was like, did I stumble over like one of the body dysmorphia landmines? Did I like, and I was like, oh, shit, I don't know. I would also be worried about the same thing. And when they finally got back to him, they had been in bed all week. Because they'd been together, what, 20 years? And
something
had just
like that,
not been having vaginal sex that whole time because of the dysmorphia issues, but now they're like, shit's a little different now.
Wow.
It's a little different.
That's amazing.
Love it, Mike.
I was like, I'm so
yes,
proud.
Yes, that is amazing. Right,
so
on.
On one of our episodes, we had Brianna, who transitioned from male to female, and she explained that she couldn't have an orgasm for...
It was very hard.
Yeah, for like, I want to say years, mm-hmm, post-op, and she struggled
the
really
hard. The healing
process
is rough.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And finally, when she was able to do it, she was like, she couldn't stop. That's all she wanted to do then, because it took so long to get to that point. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing that you were able to help him out with that. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever teach classes together?
We've taught some together.
I do the MSTK act while he's teaching his class, just because I'm an asshole. But that's, I mean, one of the ways that we get people coming in is we will teach classes, and we usually have stuff that we can both teach, or if I'm needing some help with something, like he can talk more about electronics because he's an electronics engineer. So mm-hmm, I can show people how a thing goes zap, but explaining like there's a mercury switch in it or
oh yeah,
flux capacitor.
Yeah.
Thing. Yes.
The flux capacitor.
I make the thingy go boom, and he explains how thingy go boom.
Yeah,
so.
And sometimes I even have to kind of remind myself that not everyone wants to know that much about why it does the thing that it does. Mm-hmm.
That's part of the exciting shit.
I geek out on it. Yeah, totally. But
I'm that same way, too. I want to know how it works. Explain to me.
If I'd been a Neanderthal living in a cave, I'd be like, I found a new stick. I'd be like, want to see what this one does? It's got pokey things on it, like, ooh.
So we got to plug it. So tell us where, first of all, Mike, why don't you tell us where we can find the website for Rack Room and everything like that.
Yep, it's www.rackroomdenver.com.
Okay.
Yep.
And then for the mistress side of the business?
Professional stuff, Pavlovia, Pavlovia, Denver.com.
Okay, perfect. So check out their websites.
Yeah, absolutely. And like to sign up for your classes and stuff, do you go to the Rack Room?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wonderful. And you guys teach them at the Rack Room?
Yes. Mostly. Every now and then we'll go visit people or travel someplace to a conference.
Yeah, so then sometimes bigger events, you know.
besides the classes, what else do you have? Do you have open play at the Rock Room? Or
we have open play. We have age play parties. We do femdom, female dominance nights. We have a 420 party once a month, hot box. And we have, we had been having rope practices, but the market in Denver has really become saturated with rope stuff. What else? Age play parties. We're having a funny farm. I call it funny farm because it's age play and pet play. So people that like to be puppies and kitties rather than the leather boy, leather B-O-I, or gay leather thing is the puppy play. But when people are just being pets, then puppies and kitties and fluffy little monsters and stuff and little kids that like to like pet. So they will come and we will do coloring books. And I also do a hard candy party every now and then for people that are into age play on the X-rated side, which terrifies the bigs like me. When somebody who is in a little headspace comes up and says, would you give me a spanking? Like, I can help you make cookies. So uncomfortable, but it helps. Like, the one time one person was in that age play space and like little girl space and was like, would you give me a spanking? Like, I will do it because I trust her. Flipped up the skirt, saw the grown-up ass, like, oh, thank God. Okay. I get this. I see Gracie, grown-up ass. Hello, grown-up ass.
Yes. Right.
I know what to do with this.
So do you guys have a calendar on the website then? That
yep. Yeah. Everything's posted on there. One other event that we did pre-pandemic as a tasting event. We had stopped it for a while during the pandemic. I mean, we were closed period for the first little bit, but even when we started opening back up, trying to be as precautious as possible, so we weren't letting people play with any other people that were just randomly there, like, you know, bring your partner with you that you want to play with.
Great for rules fetishists.
Yes. Yes.
So if you have somebody that has no idea about kink but wants to get into the scene, would you recommend that they came to an open play, or would you recommend that they started with one of your classes, or how would you
recommend that they probably spend some time reading, that they maybe go to some munches where they're not going to be seeing people play? A lot of times people will have PTSD, maybe around sexual trauma, and they're not going to know that when they walk into a dungeon, they might be hearing or seeing something that is going to trigger them. So they need to learn a little bit more about it before they come in and just kind of get hit with, like, I did not know I was going to be seeing that. Oh, so being aware, like, it's okay if you feel really uncomfortable with stuff. That's fine. That's normal. People are complex, and nothing, if this weren't something that were out of the norm, then we wouldn't be having fun with it. So it's cool if you're not comfortable with things, but just be aware that we can do things to help mitigate that discomfort, and we can give you places to kind of go chill out and talk through it and stuff if you're feeling a little bit panicky or whatever. But definitely maybe go to munches first, where you can just sit around people and just talk to them and get to know people a little bit that are in the kink scene, and maybe make friends with them on social media.
No sense of obligation to do anything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You do not have to. You can always wait till later to do something. You might think something looks like a lot of fun, but like, just listen, wait, take your time, get to know people a little bit, because by the time you're letting somebody tie you up, electrocute you, light you on fire, you really don't want to find out after the fact that maybe they have several different kinds of psychological issues.
That makes sense.
Right.
And maybe don't go home with people that aren't going to any public events, because there might be a reason that they are not going to public events, because people would catch on really quickly to the fact that you're a fucking creeper. And you don't respect boundaries. And
which is huge in the kink community. Like I said off air before we started recording, I really respect how much you guys respect boundaries and clearly lay out all the rules ahead of time. And so that everybody's on the same page and there's no issues of non-consent or
no miscommunication whatsoever.
Exactly.
It can still happen. Nothing's ever 100% safe, but we are at least letting people know that there's, we can mitigate the risk-aware consensual kink. So
yes.
So please ask people. We try to normalize talking about STIs. So like, there are some STIs that can be transmitted without contact with mucous membranes, like HPV, that can be shed through dry skin in the groin area. So if somebody's like, oh, by the way, I am positive for HPV, I don't know what my viral count is, but if we're going to do a spanking scene, you probably want me to keep my underwear on. It's entirely up to you, but this could be a risk for you. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody has been, you know, taking some kind of psychoactive substance, then letting people know, like, I smoked a little bit of weed today for pain or for grins or both. So if you want me to do something really complex with you, like needle play, maybe let's wait for another day when I don't have that in my system.
Gotcha.
So normalizing people being able to talk about, like, we're meat sex, we're made of meat and chemicals, and a lot of thinking that anything could happen. So it's fine to just talk about stuff. It's what makes us interesting is the things that make us different. I love scars because they tell you where a person's been.
Oh, so, I love it.
Yeah.
It's like, battle wound. I tell
me how you lost that little finger that, or where your other testicle went.
I got a big old one right
Please,
here.
Just make sure that you tell me ahead of time, though.
Right? Right?
Let a bitch know.
Let a bitch know.
Yeah, details matter.
I say that all the time. Details
right?
Matter.
Right?
Well, again, thank you guys so much for coming and joining us on the show. It's been amazing. Really, your education level has been mind-blowing. Like, you nailed it on the head. Bob Ross of
BDSM community.
Yes,
there
exactly.
You go.
We've got so many friends that have Bob Ross fixations. There's waffle irons with Bob Ross on them. So
right? That shit is so weird. I love it.
Well, check out the Rack Room. It's in Aurora, correct?
Yes.
What are the major cross streets?
6th and 225.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, wonderful.
6th Avenue and 225
it's
in Aurora.
Very close to a light rail station.
Okay.
Perfect. And we are
it sounds like
wheelchair accessible, but not ADA compliant because we don't really have enough money to rehab a building. But wheelchairs can go into the bathrooms and they can get up a little ramp.
Okay.
But
okay.
The back stairs out into the alley are going to be a little bumpy.
Might need some help going down, huh?
That's what she said.
I love it.
Again, thank you guys for coming, and we really appreciate everything that you shared with us today.
Thank you so much,
thank
guys.
You.
Appreciate it. Love you guys.
Ishes, you know where to find us. Check us out on Spotify. Go
YouTube,
to YouTube.
Right?
Hit that little bell, and then you'll know every time that an episode comes out.
iHeartRadio.
We appreciate you guys, and please reach out to us. Let us know if you have any questions or if you'd want to hear more from them, because it sounds like you guys would be guests that we could have back on the show. You have so much knowledge that you could share, so we really appreciate you coming on.
We both get excited about all kinds of stuff.
We could talk for hours on various things.
Nerd pride.
I love it.
I love it.
All right, Ishes, we'll see you later.